You are listening to Roadkill Radio, and that was quite an opening segment. And we will be dealing more with this general issue with Zabeth Bain a little later in the show. But first, as a before we go to Zabeth, we're gonna change our subject matter a bit here to give a little variety, I think, and relief.
Well, and allow
so
me
much.
To breathe,
yeah,
because
right.
I just, you know, these cases, Terry, you know, it just...
Yeah. We'll go to another story now, which is, it's a good news story, and I think we need some good news. And this is the fact that Volume 1, Number 1, Summer 2011 edition of the Canadian Observer, a magazine of culture, politics, and public affairs, has now been published. Joining us on the line from Ottawa now is its publisher, Joseph Benami. Hello, Joseph.
Good evening, everyone. How are you tonight?
Very well, thank you. And thank you for being patient. We had an amazing first segment of the show here, and we had to go a little long with it, a little
Not
longer
a problem.
With it. And
we're just sitting here in the middle of a blackout anyway.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
A snowstorm in Ottawa, perhaps, or a tornado? What hit?
Well, quite a violent thunderstorm.
Oh, okay.
And so I'm sitting here talking to you with lots of little candles lit up
okay.
around me, and it's... feeling like the 1960s here.
Okay.
Sounds like a perfect Roadkill Radio night.
Now, it was you at about 5 minutes ago left a message on my cell phone. Is that right?
I did, yes.
Okay,
I just
good.
Wasn't sure
yeah,
about
okay,
how
good.
We were connecting.
Yeah,
okay.
We were calling you, so I don't need to rush out and listen to that, too. I figured it was you and because we were a little late. So, I want to tell Joseph Benami, I've been involved in three different conservative-oriented magazines across Canada. One was British Columbia Report. I was editor of that for most of the 1990s. And then The Report magazine from the late 90s to the early 80s. And then the Western Standard magazine in the mid-2000s. I got my years mixed up here. But anyway, so for about 15 years, I was working with conservative magazines. They're great to work for, great to work with. Got all sorts of great journalism done, and they all lost money and are not around anymore. So I'm really happy to see that the Canadian Observer is taking the step to go out there where others have feared to go. Are you going to make this one work? How are you going to make this work?
Well, you know, that's a good question, and I guess the simple answer to the question. Terry, is that our business model is probably significantly different than that of the publications that you've mentioned. We're not a weekly or a monthly news magazine with a conservative orientation. We're a magazine of conservative thought and opinion. We're a serious magazine, but not overly academic. We have a little bit of humor in it, but we're not facetious, and we're talking about conservative principles. We're not a policy magazine per se, although we do touch on public policy issues where in the context of discussing policy principles. So our circulation to start with is modest. We're sitting at about 5,000 of our, which is what our circulation is right now to begin with, and we figure that we're going to take it from there. We're going to grow slowly, keep things under control, and we're very confident that you know, nobody's going to get rich doing this, but we feel that there's a void that has to be filled in this country, We just decided that there'd been too much talk about doing it and not enough action, mm-hmm. So we acted.
Yeah. In a way, that's what Carrie and I are doing here with Roadkill Radio, attempting to fill a void, right?
Yeah, but we're facetious.
Wow, we have to.
And
hey,
people like it, Joseph. You need to rethink that aspect.
There's humor here. I see the headline on Barbara Kay's article in the first edition is, "Feminism is dead, only the whining remains." I haven't had a chance to read that.
That's rather facetious.
That looks good.
Well, let's call it provocative.
Good. All right. Well, that's
I like provocative.
There needs to be a sense of humor, without a doubt. And
well, sure, we have to be able to laugh at ourselves as Canadians. And
oh no, I mean laughing
well.
At everybody else.
Well,
we don't laugh at ourselves.
But Joseph,
yeah.
Really, in order to write about anything conservative in this country, that's an automatic being provocative. How dare a conservative speak out and voice their opinion on anything?
Well, you know, I have two things to say to that. The first thing is that not enough conservative thinkers and leaders in this country do speak out explicitly as conservatives. It's become almost a dirty word. In fact, I keep thinking to myself, I'm going to write my life ambition is to write the book, you know, conservative is not a four-letter word.
But Tory is.
Tory.
Good one, Terry.
So there aren't enough people who in the conservative movement who are willing to just stand up and say, you know what, being a conservative is not a bad thing. We stand for principles and ideas that are time-tested. They are wise. Doesn't mean that we don't make mistakes, but we're well equipped to recognize our fallibility and to try to correct those mistakes along the way. So that's the first thing I'd say. The second thing is, you know, there's an audience for this in this country. Mm-hmm. Canadians are far more conservative than the elite academia and the mainstream media are prepared to admit or recognize. But I think that they are. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to be out there in the marketplace and say, you know, it's okay to be a conservative. It's okay to hold these views. And not only is it okay, but it's the norm in this country, far more normal than some of the radical leftist views that seem to permeate politics and the media.
Now, I'm thinking about one of the rules. Certainly, when you describe how your magazine is going to operate, and it's not going to be a policy wonk journal per se. It's going to be public affairs and ideas, and that got me. And then I would think that you would want those ideas to percolate into politics and maybe even develop language that politicians can use. And the perfect example of the success of that approach, I would say, would be, the most recent one anyway, would be Ezra Levant's book, Ethical Oil, which gave such a strong case for the Alberta oil sands and how that's actually better oil to use environmentally, socially, economically than importing oil from just about anywhere else in the world. And we started to see conservative cabinet ministers using that exact argument to rebut criticisms from environmentalists in the United States and in Canada. Is that the sort of thing that you're aiming for with the Canadian Observer?
Terry, it is. What we're trying to do is we're trying to you know, building a movement is like building a business, except that the kind of capital that we deal in a movement is intellectual capital as opposed to dollars and cents. And we're trying to do our part in helping to build the conservative movement. And so how we're doing it is we're trying to build intellectual capital. We're trying to help policymakers. And not just conservative policymakers, but policymakers on both sides of the political spectrum, to understand the arguments that are out there. And, you know, there's an old adage that we conservatives forget over and over and over again in this country, unfortunately, and that is that if you want to win the argument, you first have to make it. And we're so afraid of our shadows. We're so afraid of being called names and maybe not getting invited to the right dinner parties. And the right
maybe in Ottawa show. You guys are.
Yeah.
Not out here on the West Coast. Not with Roadkill Radio, we aren't.
No, not with you guys. But, you know, I'm here in Ottawa, Terry. I live and breathe in the world of professional politics. So I see this thing every day. We have a lot of great people here in politics, but there's a real fear, and I think an unjustified fear, to stand up and say, this is what we believe in, and this is why we believe in it. That's the most important thing. And when you do that, and you do that publicly, there are a lot of people out there that are going to pause, and they're going to scratch their heads and go, you know, I never thought of it that way, but I agree with you. And this is our number one enemy as small-c conservatives in Canada, is that we don't stand up and talk openly about what we believe in and why we believe in it.
Because we have the better arguments, as far as I'm concerned. But this leads to a question. What exactly do you mean by conservatism here? Traditional, libertarian, neocon, economic conservatism? Have you got some sort of definition you're working from, or are you just sort of open and willing to expand and explore?
Well, that's another excellent question. And we're certainly open to exploration, but I would have to say that if we were going to define ourselves, we would have to say that we are traditional conservatives, cultural conservatives, if you will. But, you know, the reality is I don't believe, and I think that the rest of us involved in this magazine don't really believe in what we call the bifurcation argument, the notion that there's a separation between fiscal or economic conservatives and social conservatives and cultural conservatives. We believe in people. We believe in small government. We believe that our freedom, the standard
Joseph?
Of living that we enjoy, the quality of life that we have in this country didn't just happen in a vacuum, that these things are the necessary outcomes of a particular cultural environment. And there are behaviors and traditions and norms that are attached to that cultural environment.
Well, you know what, Joseph? Let me just stop you there, because we actually got onto this conversation once, because so much of what you just said reminded me during a show one day. We were talking about what it is to be conservative, and I just out of the blue said, well, I'm a cheap conservative. I'm tired of paying for everybody else's mistakes and wanting not to be responsible and having Carrie and all her children pay for everybody. You know, I brought enough children in this world to accommodate myself and my husband and a few extra. You know, I've done my duty, so I'm a cheap Canadian.
A cost-conscious con.
But then our Terry O'Neill came up with a brilliant, well, much more diplomatic, you know, I'm kind of one of those blunt conservatives.
I just said you're a common sense conservative.
Yeah. And everybody in our studio audience here went, yeah.
A gasp of recognition, common sense con. Or, you know what, and if that sounds too kind of hokey and too Mike Harris-y for you, I think we came up with another one, civil conservative.
There you go.
A civil conservative. I hadn't heard that term.
Well, we made that up.
That's
here.
That's a roadkill radio
special. That's another
special.
One. Usually about once every show, something flies off from the top of my head, hits the wall, and bounces back, hits Carrie between the eyes.
And ends up on our dictionary.
Yeah, it ends up on our dictionary on roadkill. So a civil con.
It's important. I think it's important to remember, and this is, a lot of your listeners maybe haven't heard anyone say this before, but really it's hard to define conservatism because, as Russell Kirk pointed out in his great work, The Conservative Mind, his survey of conservative thinking through the centuries, that conservatism really is not an ideology. And I know that how often do you hear people say, oh, you're just an ideological conservative. But the reality is it's not an ideology, a single ideology or a single doctrine. It's about first principles. It's about things that work. And going back and looking at how things work and what has worked in the past and trying to apply those lessons and those principles to a changing society. And so when you think about it that way, it's really very difficult to come up with a single concise definition of conservatism or what a conservative is. On the cost,
maybe it's like a proverb. Maybe it's a proverb conservative. The lessons that are enunciated in the proverbs, not just the biblical proverbs, but the proverbs that we've all grown up with. A bird in the hand is worth two in the bush, you know. Chickens come home to roost.
Cliches that people disdain. But when you think about them, they make so much sense.
Yeah.
You know, look after the pennies, and the dollars look after themselves. It's such a beautiful saying, and nobody thinks about the deep meaning of that and the common sense that's embodied in such a cliche.
That's right. And those common sense, that common sense wisdom. I mean, I write a weekly debate column in the Tri-City News here, and I quite often open that with a bit of that sort of wisdom, because we have got a hardcore left winger who's always got these, you know, ideological arguments, and I want to kind of embrace my readers with a bit of common sense. Mama told me this, better to be safe than sorry. And actually, that's how I started my editorial last Friday about the Vancouver riots. Because the Vancouver police and Vancouver City Hall obviously didn't, I said, too bad my mom didn't call up Mayor Gregor Robertson the night before Game 7 and said, Mayor Robertson, it's better to be safe than sorry. And now they're sorry because they didn't put enough police officers on the street. So those sorts of things. I agree with you 100% on that. These are powerful things, and looking to those, looking back to the wisdom of the ages, as I remind Carrie all the time, the sort of principles embodied in that was stood behind Rudyard Kipling's fantastic poem, "The Gods of the Copybook Henning." Do you know that poem?
I do, as a matter of fact.
Yes.
Yeah.
So anyway, that sort of motivates a lot of. So I'm right on with you on this one, Canadian Observer. I'm gonna have to write for the magazine. I'm gonna have to give you some stuff.
All right. So tell us a little bit more about who's contributing to this adventure you're on, Joseph.
Well, the from the business side of things, there's a small group of us that are principally here in Ottawa that decided that we wanted to pull this together. Our first issue has some fairly well-known writers. I'm sure some of your listeners have heard of, know of Salim Mansour, a great writer talking about, he writes a fairly intellectual piece actually in this particular issue on fiction telling a greater truth is actually the title of it. It's a fascinating essay. Rory Leishman, Barbara Kay, as you mentioned, and in future issues, we're also going to have William Gardner will be writing with us as well, and a few other people that will roll out over time. But it's not just about the names; it's about the ideas. And one of the things that we really want to do is we want to give an opportunity for young, bright, articulate, small C conservatives to spread their wings and to build their portfolios themselves. So we're not just looking for people who have name recognition, but we're looking for new young writers as well to come forward and say, you know, I have an idea, I want to see whether this fits into the mindset, if you will, of the magazine. So if, you know, people read the issue that we have already published, there are going to be a lot of names in there that people are not going to recognize. But we're not trying to sell it on name recognition. We're trying to sell it on the quality of the thinking and the arguments that go into the positions that are being put out.
I've got a couple of questions on that. And one of them goes to censorship, or are you going to give liberty to your writers? Is there have to be any fear of editorial mismanagement, and they're going to come in and tell your writers what they can and cannot talk about?
No, we're giving a pretty good free rein to our writers. You know, we have an editorial board. We have a general idea of the themes that we want to be talking about, you know, we're not interested in being politically correct. Our rules are don't libel anyone, but there are, you know, short of breaking the law, which is what libel is, you know, there are no shibboleths here. There's nothing that is sacred that our writers shouldn't be picking apart and talking about.
So do you mean that there is this chance, this chance that I might see a wonderful article in the Canadian Observer, written by Terry O'Neill on the Canadian Human Rights Commission?
Oh, well, you know, if Terry writes a column or an essay on the fallacies of human rights commissions and human rights legislation and the whole ideology of human rights, I can guarantee you that we wouldn't be afraid of publishing it because of the subject matter. No, that's a little bit of a pet peeve of mine.
Yes.
So you two would just fit like dovetails in this, is that
so.
It?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
We'd fit together pretty well. I'm not going to say don't get me started here because I want to be started on this one. So.
Oh, listen, Terry, don't get me started.
Yeah, okay, I won't because we don't have much time.
I think it's appalling that in a country...
we've got you started.
Like ours... That we have these committees of public safety. I mean, if this was 200 years ago, we'd be parading accused human rights violators in the streets, bringing them up to have their heads chopped off by the guillotine like they did after the revolution in France. I mean, the only reason that we are not doing that in this day and age is because it's not appropriate to execute people. We don't believe in public
executions. No, we don't want them to bleed on the street.
But make no mistake about it, the mindset that goes into human rights commissions and tribunals and the witch hunts and the kangaroo courts, that entire structure is no better by any stretch of the imagination than the old committees of public safety that really were beheading people en masse in France post-revolution. Because there are no public executions doesn't mean that the mindset and the arguments and the philosophy and ideology behind it are any better. They are not. They are just as wrong and just as dangerous intellectually today as they were 200 years ago.
Well, I have to tell you about a case that I happened on that didn't receive any too much publicity anyway, and it happened as a result. Well, we did remember the human rights case here in British Columbia about the guy who was being discriminated against, Terry, because the pet services wouldn't allow him to adopt a dog that he believed was the reincarnation of his dog that had died.
Oh, I had tried to forget that one, but now that you bring it up, I remember.
Now, this is, they entertain these kinds of cases, Joseph, but the one that I happened upon that I didn't know about, and because I, you know, here in British Columbia, everybody has protected rights under the Human Rights Commission except Christians. If you're a Christian, then your case gets dismissed regardless of its how valid it is. But there is another guy who is a practicing pagan who said that his sexual orientation practices of sadomasochism and bondage was integral to his religious beliefs, and he was discriminated against by the Vancouver Police Department because they wouldn't issue him a license to drive as a chauffeur. That case was heard, if you can believe it.
There are so many things.
Did he win?
You know what? No, he didn't. Because he eventually got his license through another channel, but ironically, the Human Rights Tribunal said they weren't going to rule on the sexual orientation aspect because it was no longer a part of the decision making that was going on with this particular case. They said the Vancouver police acted appropriately because there was a history of him putting his girlfriend in bondage, even though she signed a consent form.
Oh, let's stop. This is just crazy.
Your tax dollars at work, Terry.
On and on. One last question, Joseph, for you. Is the launch of the Canadian Observer, is this a serendipitous to the election of a conservative majority government, or was it in reaction to the election of a conservative majority government?
Pure coincidence. It was a pure coincidence. I think that our launch, given the fact that we have a new conservative government that's in a majority situation, I think is very fortuitous because I think that conservative governments, you know, getting back to, you know, going full circle back to what we talked about at the beginning of this of our chat, conservative governments have for better or worse, not been very conservative historically in this country. And this is an opportunity for us to give them some kind of an intellectual and spiritual foundation and a little bit of a push and say, you know, there are things that you can do as conservatives while you're in government. We don't have to be radical or anything like that. We don't have to tear down the socialist system all in one shot. But we should be moving the country in a certain direction, and it should be measurable. It should be noticeable. And I think, you know, if when else will you have an opportunity to do this? When else will you have an opportunity to demonstrate to Canadians that common sense conservative policies really do work? So this is a great opportunity for us to have some sway, we hope, over the direction that the government takes as well.
Well, and as I think earlier, the points that both you and Terry made, the language of that discussion, Joseph, because people are hungry for leadership in this nation. I mean, I get to go out and speak to people all the time, large groups of people. People want leadership. People want a clear direction of common sense, and that word keeps coming up. Civility, they're tired of being called names. And I think there's an expectation now that the Conservatives have the majority that people want to see, as you say, a measurable difference. They want to see things happening that are moving this nation in a conservative direction. And I don't even, the term conservative, common sense, there are things that work and there are things that don't work. This country is not working at this point in time.
As I like to say, at some point in time, the Conservative Party, or use the plural, conservative parties, have to represent something more significant, something more substantial than the mere fact that they're not liberals. Because if that's all they are, then, you know, every now and then when the public is tired of the Liberal Party being in power, wherever that is, they throw the bums out, and then after one electoral cycle or two, they're back in power for another decade or two decades. We have to demonstrate to Canadians that conservatives do stand for something different. This is what we believe in. This is why we believe in it. And implement some of these policies, bring about some of these changes, and remind Canadians of just how sensible they really are and that there's really nothing to fear from them. In fact, there's everything to support.
Well, isn't it just sort of the liberal left-wing thunkers, I call them, you know, that
I haven't heard that. The thunkers, not the thinkers.
Right.
I have not heard you say that.
I know. There's my contribution to the dictionary.
I love it. Let's put that one in. Okay.
I went in earlier today, actually.
Oh, great.
But you know, the thunkers, you know, they make a lot of noise and they bash about. But, you know, they're a real minority. Every time that they're challenged to come out and show any kind of force en masse, they just don't exist, Joseph. This is, you know, are we going to see conservatives become a little bit more courageous on these fronts? And, you know, I was thinking back as you were speaking, you know, we had a few mutinies here in British Columbia, and one that comes up to first in my mind was Val Meredith, who was not very conservative, and she got dealt with. You know, there was an uprising within her constituency there, and replaced with Rick Hebert. If this government and some of its MPs don't act in the way that Canadians want them to act, do you see more of this kind of activism happening among the conservative Canadian group?
Well, I certainly do, and just on that point alone, I was somewhat involved here in suburban Ottawa in precisely that type of a situation where there was a conservative MPP, a member of the provincial legislature here. In fact, Norm Sterling was the longest-serving member of the provincial legislature here in Ontario. He was a member of the Conservative Party and a sitting member. This is the first time in history that someone actually, some of his constituents just were so tired of the red Toryism that he represented that there was a rebellion in the riding, and this spring a group of people in the constituency found somebody to run against him. They had an open nomination and they actually knocked him off. And it sent shockwaves through the political establishment here in Ontario, in particularly conservative circles, because now all of a sudden elected conservative members of the legislature are starting to realize that, you know what, their seats aren't safe from their own friends if they don't follow through with what they're supposed to be following through with.
And I've heard this more and more. So what you're talking exactly on the point that I'm hearing about, the people going through the list, and if their representatives, their elected representatives, aren't representing them, goodbye, Charlie.
Mm-hmm. So to wrap this up, one of our listeners has just sent us an email saying that besides teaching politicians about some of the subjects, the Canadian Observer will also have the beneficial effect of instructing some of the government mandarins about some ideas and at least preparing the ground, softening them up for conservative ministers to go in there and change their ways. So it could have that positive effect as well.
Well, that's certainly our intention, and you know, all I could do, if you'll allow me, just, you know, give the 15-second plug.
Yes, go
ahead. You know, none of us are wealthy people. We're not subsidizing this. It's not a charity case. We're asking people to subscribe to the magazine, and I can promise you that your subscription will be well spent. Not only will you'll be getting a good quality journal yourselves, but you'll be allowing us to make sure that it's getting in the faces of not just politicians but senior bureaucrats and academics right across the country. We have a very methodical way of rolling this out over the next year, making sure that the right people are seeing the arguments, whether they agree with them or not. At least they'll be reading them. And the website, by the way, CanadianObserverMag.ca.
CanadianObserverMag.ca.
What's the subscription rate, Joseph?
The subscription is $29 for a year.
Okay, and that'll be a quarterly, so that's four editions a year. So good, four issues a year. So that's a pretty good price, 4 into 30, not bad.
We think so.
Good. All right. Well, thank you, and great good luck. And I have to slap you on the wrist for not letting us know more in advance that you guys are coming out with this, because if you want to have inroads into the West Coast and conservative community here, Roadkill Radio is a good way of doing that.
Is your highway.
That's right. Your
that
highway
goal.
To the super highway to truth.
Well, guys, consider me adequately chastised.
Okay, good.
Well, the highway to the people.
That's
anyway.
Right. Okay, good. Thank you very much for coming on the show, and I hope your lights go back on soon. I'm glad your phone service is working anyway.
So am I, and thanks so much for having me.
Okay, that's great.
Best of luck, too.
Thank you. Best of luck, Joseph. To you. Bye-bye.
Good group of people.
Absolutely, and you know, there's a lot of familiar names on their list of featured articles. We've had Barbara Kay on the show before as a guest. Andrea Morozik has written something. We've had her on the show. Rory Leishman, we've had Rory, haven't we?
Yeah, we've had Rory.
Yeah, Salim Mansour, we have not.
Bill Gardner, we've had
on. Their editor is Richard Bastien, and I actually talked to him today, and he's very keen on getting this thing going as well. And he's written a couple of featured pieces.
I am keen on seeing your name with that article, because I think that is not only timely but necessary.
Yeah, I've already talked to Richard about something to do with human rights, and I think I will do something. Just see how my summer shapes up. Before we go to our next guest, or do you want me to? There's need for some therapy, isn't there?
Oh, always
can
need
we,
for
before
therapy.
Before we go to the Zabeth
I need
Thames.
Somebody to need therapy more than I need therapy
okay.
at this point. So
right.
you
Good.
Just
All right.
give me a double
yeah, yeah.
dose of your therapy need.
Do you remember Baby Storm, the genderless baby out of Toronto, and the parents were attempting to raise Baby Storm without letting anyone know his or her sex? Do you remember that?
How could I forget
yeah,
that
Yeah, and
case?
We talked to, is that where you talked to Barbara Kay about that, didn't we?
I think
yeah,
we did.
Yeah, that was Barbara Kay.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, it was a misguided kind of a hyper-feminist, anti-patriarchy, new age kind of
bizarre social experiment.
Post-sexual, sexual identity type thing. Anyway, so we thought, is it just these wacky Torontonian hippy-dippy parents?
One who's a social justice teacher.
We
knew that had to happen.
You know what? I have a little bad news for you. Out of Stockholm, Sweden.
Okay, wait, stop.
Yeah, you have to stop. You've got to settle down.
Before you say this, am I going to need more therapy after
yes,
you tell
you,
me?
Yes, you will.
Okay, I just want to prepare
okay.
myself.
Okay, take a deep breath. Out of Stockholm, Sweden, There is a preschool that the staff of the school is called Egalia, which of course is, probably means equality or egalitarianism. They have decided. They have decided, but if there are 30 boys and girls aged 1 to 6, they won't call them boys and girls anymore. They will call them friends. Instead of boys, girls, they'll say friends to everybody. And beyond that, they have made up an entire new word to replace him and her. They will not say him or her, he or she anymore. They've made up a new word. And that word, well, in for him and her, currently the him is in Swedish is han, and for her it's han. They decided, just to pull this out of thin air, to have, instead of calling the boys han and the girls han, they're going to call everybody hen. Hen. All right? So,
wait, it gets better?
Well, it's a made-up word that does not exist in Swedish, but is actually used extensively by feminists, radical feminists, and by homosexuals already in... Now, I'm too... Maybe I'm going to give people ideas here, but you know how I kind of say... These things happen, and these ideas spread,
yes,
and
they
we
do.
Are going to, this is probably a cutting-edge kind of a thing, and I predict that within 10 or 15 years, just as we have Ms. now that came out of the blue, that was to replace Miss and Mrs., we now have Ms., we are probably going to start seeing this sort of thing in the English language. I can't possibly predict. Well, we already see it now with on second reference. If it's a him or her, we see them. We just see they or them. We already replace a single, what should be a singular reference with a plural to avoid a gender-specific thing.
We have it happening with Baby Storm.
We have it happening in a single case in Toronto. But like a viral contagion, this little epidemic may soon become a pandemic if this sort of idea start spreading, and I don't know. Hopefully, we'll be common sense enough and realistic enough about essential human nature about the division. I'm just hoping this.
Is this a new definition of the Stockholm syndrome?
Yeah, the Stockholm syndrome.
We can create new words and new definitions.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I thought that I was going to make a joke about being all in the hen house here or something like this, because the hon or the hon, and we had the hen, and we could cue the Vancouver Tales from Vancouverville here sound effect, but he's probably not listening. But anyway, this is not actually a therapy moment for me.
No, this is serious.
This is serious,
it is
and
very
I'm
serious.
Just kind of passing on this information and tip of the metaphorical hat to LifeSite News, which is always is on top of these things, and this is where I got this. And I thought that since we've dealt with this issue before, that I better... we do have that. So thank goodness for our on-the-ball producer there who gave us the cackle for the word hen, which is now going to be used.
And Terry, I want to tell you that you are right on, because let me tell you what's already going on in our schools.
Okay.
In the schools now, because we're adopting all this, we don't want to offend anybody... You are no longer allowed to refer to children having boyfriend or girlfriend. It must now all be partner.
Even a partner? Like a high school partner?
A high school partner.
He's not my partner.
Well,
howdy, partner.
You can't offend people by why would you gender identify somebody as a girlfriend or a boyfriend?
I'm getting upset here.
So you are,
all right.
You
so
are
I started
bang
the subject.
On with this. It's
That's
already,
right. It's
being
already happening. So people out there in Roadkill Radio Land, you have been duly warned.
Well, and no, more than warned. I like my men to be men, and I like being a woman.
Well, yeah, I've been warned to be on the lookout for this. And
yes.
And what this warning entails is a call to action as well. Oppose this wherever you see it manifested.
And you speak up for yourselves.
Speak
if
up.
It's ridiculous,
right.
Call it that. Call it absurd. Call Len here and get him to play the chicken sound so you get emboldened to stand firm with truth.
It's the top of the hour, and you are listening to the mighty Roadkill Radio with Carrie Simpson and Terry O'Neill. And as usual, please send us emails if you have comments, questions, queries. And Deanna has just sent us a comment about human rights commissions, and I'm calling that up right now. Oh, it's a longer issue. Well, I'll take a look at that later, Dan. Thank you very much for looking at, for sending that in. We were just talking about it. So,
yeah, it's not like you need more information on the Human Rights Commission.
Jennifer Lynch and the CHRC being ethically challenged. Jennifer Lynch is not part of the CHRC anymore, by the way. They have a new acting commissar.
Speaking of the Canadian Human Rights Commission, is there any progress, Terry? Is there any good news?
When last we touched on the subject of my half-year-long attempt to update the story from a year and a half ago, and I won't get into all the details, I had given up on attempting to get an answer from the Human Rights Commission temporarily and attempted... And I messaged instead the person who laid the complaint, Jens Hellquist of the Rainbow Health Coalition.
Okay, go right to the source.
And I haven't heard back from him either.
What? He's
so
not talking to you?
So he's not talking to me. The Human Rights Commission is not talking to me. Please, someone out there, let me know what's going on with this. I mean, I'll try again with the Human Rights.
Well,
maybe there's...
And I have to give you some more bad news.
Oh, no.
Because... I tried on your behalf. Well, no, I know you want to go direct to the source kind of thing.
Oh, okay.
You know, so I thought the federal government, the Department of Health, because they're named in this little complaint, and we have a legal department associated with that whole ministry,
right,
that they would put me in touch with the legal counsel,
okay,
and I would
get an answer
because aren't they supposed to respond to us, the people?
Right on. Good. And?
I haven't heard from them.
Nothing.
Nothing.
All right. You know, it's time for another Freedom of Information application to the commission.
I think so.
I was sort of successful in that about 3 years ago. It helped us launch some of the fun on the show.
Well,
so maybe I should do that again.
And across the country because you were the leading rubble rouser, if we can talk about
pot
that.
Pot stirrer.
No,
stirring that big pot.
Is
just
that
seeing
what, you were
what
doing?
I love stirring that pot.
And look what came
seeing
out
what
your
comes
name.
Bubbles to the top. Double bubble, toil and trouble.
Yeah, Terry O'Neill on the Lynch list.
That's right. I'm on the Lynch list.